What's the economic fix when interest rates have already hit bottom?
It may be less than zero.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good day to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Bill Radke, and you're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, August 10th. A couple of internet giants are pushing their weight around when it comes to how you do your web surfing.
Also, South Korea stages a police raid over online privacy concerns, and the reward is $3,000 for finding a man a job. But first,
let's turn to our Tuesday morning regular. Analyst Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company joins us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Bill.
So as I said, the Fed will talk today about its plans for helping the economy. Some people think it's going to buy up yet more mortgages and bonds. My question, Julie, is why not?
Well, at this point, the Fed is under huge pressure to do something. Don't just stand there. You've got to do something. They can't lower interest rates anymore because banks are already borrowing at zero rates. They're not even taking the Fed cash and then lending it to other businesses at these low rates. So what can the Fed do? Buy more mortgages and junks from the banks? They're already at historic low rates. They could buy more treasuries, but that's in effect printing money, and everybody's worried about inflationary pressures. Mm. They could lower interest rates on bank reserves, but again, there's no guarantee that the banks would go out and turn around and start lending again. Bottom line is the Fed is just stuck. There are no good alternative policies for them to do right now.
Well, if the Fed doesn't have good alternatives, what's the answer, Julie?
Well, it has to go over to the federal government on the other side. The administration basically is afraid to do anything at this point because the Republicans are screaming that it's going to be inflationary. We've got huge budget deficits. So don't count on Congress or on the Treasury to do anything. So at this point, we're really just mired in this. There's no policy decision the Fed can make that will be a winner. It's time for them basically just to sit there and suck on their thumbs.
All right. Well, suck on thumbs and hope. Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company. Thank you.
You bet.
Two internet behemoths are proposing a new way for the web. Now, you may have heard the term net neutrality. That is the buzzword for this debate about whether some internet information and services can be given priority over others. Well, thankfully, I'm not going to say the words net neutrality again, but we will explain the debate here. On one side, you got your Googles and Amazons, companies that produce content and websites. On the other are the Verizons and Comcasts, the phone and cable companies that build the networks to carry the content. Well, now content maker Google says it has brokered a deal with Verizon, the internet pipeline company. And here with the rest, Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz joins us live. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Bill.
So what is this agreement these companies have come up with?
Well, here's the essence of the compromise they're proposing. The basic internet, the wires in the ground running to your house, that would continue to treat all data you're receiving equally, the way Google and most content companies want it. However, the wireless internet, Verizon and the telecom companies could prioritize data however they want, and they'd be able to lay new wires to establish super fast networks that they could maybe charge a premium for.
Okay, and why was an agreement so tricky? What were the differences Google and Verizon had to bridge?
Well, Google's with the content makers here who say your search result from Google should arrive just as fast as the same amount of data from a video on iTunes or the pictures of her cat that your aunt posts on her blog, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, Verizon and the telecommunication companies are saying, hey, we've spent a lot of money on fiber optic lines, satellites, cell phone towers. We should be able to route traffic how we want and, yes, maybe make money by offering, let's say, special treatment.
Okay, so now just because Google and Verizon have a plan, does that make this a done deal? Is the internet now changed?
Well, you can think of this Google-Verizon thing as a policy proposal, essentially, pitched to the Federal Communications Commission. Eliza Krigman covers tech policy for the National Journal.
I definitely think it is going to help inform and shape the debate and put pressure on the FCC to act on this issue.
So far, you've got free speech groups and some members of the FCC, actually, who have expressed some real skepticism of this plan. You have some rumbles that Google may be kind of sold out. Krigman says the telecom industry, they're greeting it more warmly.
Marketplace's Jeff Horwitz. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
You're welcome.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, August 10th. I'm Bob Moon in for Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We've got the global perspective for you now, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects us here in the U.S. Google's being investigated by South Korean authorities. There was a police raid on its offices in Seoul today. Seems the investigation is focused on data collected during Google's street mapping sweeps across South Korea. The BBC's John Sudworth joins us with some background on this from the South Korean capital. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
So why this raid on the Google offices?
Well, according to local news reports here, 16 police investigators carried out a search of the Google premises here in Seoul. A search that lasted several hours, we're told, and during which they seized computer hard disks and other material. It very much looks as if the action is connected to the concerns, which you'll be very familiar with, of course, already raised elsewhere about Google's Street View service. This is a service which allows users to click on interactive maps, allows them to view 360-degree photos of certain real locations. And Google has already admitted, of course, that it has mistakenly collected personal information transmitted over unsecured wireless networks while gathering and compiling the database. And it looks like this raid is connected to similar concerns here in Korea.
Has there been any concern raised before now about this Google Street View issue?
I mean, it's been widely reported here, of course, the concerns in other parts of the world. This is a big market for the internet, of course, and I think it's fair to say that Google would have been very keen to get the service up and running here. That's why it's been collecting this information for exactly the same reasons as it has been in other countries. But it looks like the South Korean police, we're told this is a specialist cyber unit set up to investigate areas of concern on the internet, believes that perhaps similar things have happened, and that appears to be why it's acted now.
The BBC's John Sudworth in Seoul. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
The British government has unveiled a new crackdown on welfare fraud. Like many European countries, the UK is struggling under massive budget cuts. And now, to find millions of dollars in lost revenue, the Brits plan to use bounty hunters to track down welfare cheats. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
We're not talking here about gunslingers for hire, like in the Wild West, but this is a break with British tradition. Under the plan, credit reporting companies will receive a bounty for every case of welfare fraud they uncover. The companies will be allowed to trawl through government databases, and they'll be able to check some details of household spending. Opponents of the measure say it looks like an invasion of privacy, and that bounty hunting is un-British. But Matthew Sinclair, who campaigns on behalf of taxpayers, welcomes the move.
Getting the private sector involved in an area where the public sector and government has always struggled to effectively police against benefit fraud is extremely good news. I don't think it can be acceptable for so much money to be lost.
The government estimates that welfare cheats rip off almost $8 billion a year, enough to run more than 200 high schools and hire an extra 150,000 nurses. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This morning, central bankers around the world are grappling with a dilemma. Should they ease up on their already relaxed lending policies to try giving the global economy a much-needed jolt? Today, central bankers in Tokyo decided to hold their interest rates steady. Now the focus shifts to our own central bank. Fed policymakers meet today, and like Japan, our interest rates have hit bottom. So where do they go from here? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
Interest rates have been near zero since the financial crisis, but the economy seems mired in the doldrums. That's why there's speculation the Fed is going to try something called quantitative easing. It's a way for the Fed to pump money into the economy by taking advantage of the trading relationships it has with the big banks. The Fed buys different types of bonds from a bank, and to pay for them, the Fed just credits the bank's account.
It just says, here, Citigroup, I want to buy $1 million of your treasury securities. I'll just credit your account. You know, it can basically just create that money out of thin air.
That's former Fed economist Ken Kuttner. He says the Fed just adds some zeros to the bank's account, and that's why some people say quantitative easing is just the Fed printing money. No actual cash changes hands. Vincent Reinhardt is another former Fed economist.
So the Fed doesn't have a printing press in the basement. It has something better.
Problem is, printing more money now could end up making our dollars worth less down the road. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, August 10th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, remember, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. The PGA Championship starts Thursday in Whistling Straits, Wisconsin, and for the first time in years, Tiger Woods is not the odds-on favorite. The problem is not his sex scandal, it is his golf. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports on marketing a fallen and struggling icon.
When it comes to product endorsements, Tiger Woods is still the biggest name in golf. But when he ends a tournament at 18 over par, like he did recently in Akron, Ohio, it could be a sign his athletic star power is starting to dim, says Webster University sports economist Patrick Risch.
He's become mortal.
And that may be his biggest problem. His sexual escapades didn't faze key sponsors like Nike and EA Sports. They stuck with him. Risch doesn't think they're ready to bail yet.
Now, if he continues to play like this in 2011, then I think the murmuring is going to get a lot louder. And at that point, some of those corporations are going to be much more likely to drop him.
All the lousy chipping and putting could put pressure on golf itself, says Risch. Woods' superhuman play has driven the sport's popularity and its TV ratings for more than a decade. With Woods off his game, fans may decide to turn off pro golf altogether. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Not only has New York City become safer in the last decade, it has also become a lot greener thanks to the proliferation of community gardens. But those oases of green could be threatened if new rules go into effect next month. Reporter Jill Barchet has that story.
What do we want?
More gardens!
What do we want?
Now!
That's the sound of urban gardeners protesting at City Hall. In recent weeks, they've been wearing revolutionary hats and shouting that the bulldozers are coming. Gardeners are upset by proposed rules that could allow commercial development of city-owned community gardens. That's banned right now. J.K. Canepa's been tending a garden in the East Village for 10 years. She's concerned that rich developers could take away her urban wetland, honeysuckle flowers, and fennel plants.
They can go to the community board and present their case and, I'm afraid, present their money. And even the most revered and treasured gardens could go.
This is not your usual clash between tree huggers and businessmen. On the other side are advocates for affordable housing. Josh Lockwood is the executive director of Habitat for Humanity, New York City. He says no one wants to destroy a garden, but the city also needs more apartments for low-income New Yorkers.
A key constraint in New York City is the availability of land. And so for affordable housing developers like us, that often means, you know, difficult conversations about how to build and where to build.
The city is slated to hold a public comment session on the new rules today. In New York, I'm Jill Barchet for Marketplace.
By now, you've probably heard about that strange case of a JetBlue flight attendant who stormed off the job by way of his plane's emergency slide yesterday at JFK Airport in New York. Witnesses say it happened after an argument with a passenger who refused to sit down when the plane landed on a flight from Pittsburgh. We've got an industry expert live on the line to talk about this. Daryl Jenkins is from the website theairlinezone.com. Mr. Jenkins, I wonder what this incident might tell us about how the relationship between flight attendants and passengers has changed over the years.
Well, it's certainly a stormy one for years. The flight attendants, people don't realize they have one of the most difficult jobs in the airline, and that is dealing day to day with people. And as we see flights have more and more people on them, it increases the stress of both the passenger and the flight attendant.
Well, certainly the job of the flight attendant has changed since 9/11, too, right?
Yes, it has. The purpose of the flight attendant is first and foremost a safety professional, and they're there to help people off the plane in case of an emergency, or if there are other emergencies in flight, it is their primary responsibility to take care of that. They're safety professionals. That's what they're trained in. At the same time, after 9/11, even though we have marshals on the plane, they've become a major factor in terms of keeping order on during in-flight.
Well, they tell us that this passenger wouldn't sit down after the plane landed and was taxiing. Aren't flight attendants trained to handle disruptive passengers?
Yes, they are, and they have different ways of doing it, including putting what's analogous to a handcuff on them. It seems in this particular case, the young man just kind of basically, for lack of a kinder word, lost it.
Well, Daryl Jenkins of the AirlineZone.com website, thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, young man.
And finally, how'd you like to make a quick $3,000?
Of course you would, and here's how. Just find this guy a job. Cyrus Imadi has been looking for work all over Los Angeles.
But 9 months of searching has failed to pay off, so he's decided to pay $3,000 to anyone who can point him to a job in his field of accounting and finance. He figures if it helps him find a job now rather than later, it won't be a bad rate of return.
So if you've got a lead, or maybe just want to borrow Cyrus's approach, you can find the link at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Bob Moon. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.